Wir gerne sehen, was ist los? It's deinen Freundo, Seth. I'm learning German. Yeah, in case you didn't know what that was. That is me trying to impress you with the little German that I know. Right now, I am actually learning German. I took it in high school. I goofed off the entire time. I did some other language learning apps. They taught me things like where the taxi stand is and how to find a bus, but not a lot of conversational German. Thankfully, that's what Babbel is all about. Babbel teaches you language conversationally, which, let's face it, that is what you want to know anyway. I don't know. When I was in school, you learned like how to count. You learned like the colors. You learned the shapes. Those are all important things, but they don't help you when you're in like Cologne, Germany with Ein Nierenstein, which, by the way, is German for kidney stone, an experience I can unfortunately speak personally to. But I've been using Babbel to learn to speak German again, better than I have before. I actually really like it because it is conversational. It's a little bit more relaxed. One of the things that it does that I really like is it'll sometimes show you what the literal English translation is. And I don't know why, but I find that very helpful in sort of understanding the structure, the grammar of a language and sort of putting myself into that mind space. Since I'm only in Germany for Gamescom, which is like a week, week and a half, I'm not immersed in the German language. I'm not immersed in German culture. So what I do is the second best thing. I'm taking Babbel. Hopefully this year when I go to Germany, I'll be able to impress all the Germans with how much German I know from learning through Babbel. The app has pronunciation recognition, so you'll be able to learn how to speak better with your accent, how to actually properly pronounce the words. That way you won't get made fun of by a group of older German men because you said Apfelstrudel and not Apfelstrudel. No, it's really cool. I'm going to say right now there is a special limited time deal for our listeners. Right now you can get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription, but only for our listeners, because you guys are the best ones, by the way, at babbel.com/realm. Get 60% off at babbel.com/realm. That is spelled babbel.com/realm. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Visible is a wireless carrier that is not invisible. It is pretty clear from the name. Actually, radio waves are invisible. And I can say this with authority as a licensed amateur radio operator. That being said, Visible won't be giving you the power to see light outside the visible spectrum. It's actually way better because having that ability would make getting around very difficult and distracting. What you do get with Visible is unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. You get one line of wireless, just $25 a month, which is great in these times of economic uncertainty. That is one line for $25, taxes and fees included. So whatever you're doing at this moment, please stop. Switch immediately. Now, monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit visible.com.
This episode of Nintendo Voice Chat is sponsored by Gamefly.
Listen!
Welcome to Nintendo Voice Chat episode 419. I'm your host, Zach Ryan, and joining me today, if you're listening in full audio form, all the way over here in regaled in full Rathalos costume, Casey DeFreitas. I've got Brian, the man, the myth, and the leather jacket, but you're wearing denim today.
Yeah, so yeah, we're throwing it off.
Mixing it up.
You're listening, pretend.
And over here, Super Smash Brendan.
Hey!
Right on, guys.
Well, I like your nicknames.
Yeah, you know, I've been thinking about these nicknames for a while. So.
That's good.
Yeah, I really mapped them out for you. But if you're watching live, you know that NVC is live every Thursday at 3 p.m. Right here on IGN.com, and you can catch it 24 hours later on YouTube and your favorite podcast services. So check us out Thursdays at 3 p.m. here, Pacific Standard Time. Some other important stuff that we need to address. You may have heard that IGN and Philip Mewson have parted ways, so we're going to temporarily be filling the host seat with other faces from IGN. If you want more information on that, be sure to check out IGN.com or Twitter. Obviously, we love doing NVC and appreciate your ongoing support, so let's dive right into this Smash Brothers Direct, of which there was a lot of news.
That's true.
Yeah. It was so good.
Every time I think, like, oh, there'll be, like one or two things this time. He'll just say, like, hey, here's a new mode. Okay, see you in December. No, here's everything else.
I'm consistently surprised by these directs and new news for Smash, and I'm always really excited about it, and I'm especially excited about this one.
I saw somebody on Twitter was kind of upset that this there wasn't news about other Nintendo games.
Well, so that's
like, this is a Smash direct.
But yeah, that's something that Nintendo has kind of introduced in the last couple of years, because like when they started doing directs, they would do directs about like big news dumps about a lot of different games. Mm-hmm. But I think probably just in the Switch generation, they've sort of narrowed it down to like, hey, we're going to do a direct about just this game. And that's what this Smash Direct was.
I appreciate
and they really,
that.
Yeah, me too. Yeah. I think it's really like, it makes for a much more focused direct. It helps me to retain a lot more of the information.
Sets expectations with the audience.
Right. Well, unless you don't understand that it's just a Smash Direct.
I feel the timing of this was odd because this game's not out for December and we're still sort of like, what's going to happen between now and then? That said, once it got started, I was like, oh, I love watching these. Like, you know, I think in terms of directs, these almost inherently are designed to be packed with surprises because that's just the way these roll out. When you see them end and the screen fades to black, with every other director, you're like, that's probably it. But with this one, like Donkey Kong shows
up.
Sakurai, like,
you know, like something's going to happen. Well,
even after it ended and the credits popped up, I still kept staring at the screen being like,
you're looking for like a Marvel, like
you got one more, right?
Well, they really started this, this direct off with a banger too, because they just killed Luigi.
Yeah,
like right out of the gate, they just put him face to face with actual death, which I think is a little bit terrifying. But,
which is weird.
Good news.
Yeah. I hope it's the plot of Luigi's Mansion 3.
Mm-hmm. Luigi dies.
Spoilers.
He vacuums himself.
It takes place in the Castlevania mansions.
Yeah.
You know, they frame these directs, especially the Super Smash Brothers directs, with these like awesome vignettes. Right, we got two of them this time around. One for Castlevania, and then one for Donkey Kong at the end. But I love the way that they're building the lore of these sort of like mashup universes.
Mm-hmm.
And this one specifically, it's Castlevania cross Luigi's Mansion, which I think is really brilliant and really kind of funny. I love the way that they set that up. But of course, it did light Twitter on fire. People were freaking out about whether or not Luigi was actually dead. Mm-hmm. And it took a few hours for Nintendo UK Versus to tweet out that he was doing fine.
Do you believe that? Do you honestly believe
only time
that?
Will tell. You know, it's a real mystery wrapped in a conundrum.
Definitely having an outer body experience, at least.
But it's so weird because it's like, that's just to show you how little respect that he gets as a character. We've seen Mario die on screen millions of times and no one has ever once questioned if it was permanent. But with Luigi, you have to ask yourself, is he dead for good?
I mean, Ridley did stab Mario through the heart and Mega Man.
That's true. That was horrible.
That was my favorite one so far. Like, I love Mega Man, Samus, and Mario just chomping through a spaceship. I thought that was very cool.
Here's the thing to keep in mind when you watch a lot of these directs. It's fake.
It's all made up. It's not real. Doesn't matter.
No one actually got killed. Those are animations. But yeah, we got Simon Belmont, which is like, if you think about it as, you know, we used to be children at some point. In many ways, we still are.
Brendan, actually. Brendan was born a full-grown man.
That's true, with a beard and everything. Yeah. So the thing that's weird about this is that we grew up with characters like Sonic and Snake and Pac-Man and Simon Belmont. And one by one, they're all ending up in Smash Brothers to the point where, like, if you're not in Smash Brothers by now, what's wrong? You know, like, we're kind of like,
how did you offend Sakurai?
Like, what did Crash Bandicoot do to not be here yet? Because it's almost at the point where everyone else has been invited to this party at this point.
Well, let's not count the Bandicoot out yet, because Sakurai made a point of saying early on in this direct that there are still a few more characters to reveal, right?
Yeah.
So in this direct, we got a look at Simon Belmont, Richter Belmont, and then Echo characters like Crom, Dark Samus, and then, of course, the King K. Rool reveal at the end, which kind of led the conversation around the office yesterday to be, are there too many characters in this Smash? I think that we're looking at, 67 characters now, and plus the Echo characters?
That's like 70?
I'm terrible at math, so I couldn't tell you.
I had the math. We have all the characters on our wiki.
Yeah, I was looking at that.
Stages. Yeah, I think it was like 70-something.
Hey, who had 5 minutes and 40 seconds before Brendan mentioned the wiki? Did anybody show of hands? No, I mean, I kind of defer to the two of you because you're obviously the biggest Smash players in the office. Brendan, you were talking before we started here about your whole next year is basically going to be Smash Brothers. So, I've sort of notoriously said that I'm a Fairweather Smash fan. So I put the question to you guys. Do you feel like 67 to 80 characters is just too many damn characters for Smash?
Personally, I don't think so. I know there are people who will play. Like, I like Mario. I play as Mario. I play as Mario last game. The game before that, I'm going to still play as Mario. And they're not going to play anybody else.
Who are you playing
as? For me?
Yeah.
Link.
Okay, cool.
Got it.
Yeah. But yeah, like, I think variety is a spice of life. And, like, I think...
Not for Smash players.
Yeah.
For some Smash
players. Would like, you read well, that on a yeah. coaster or what?
I mean, actually, I have a little plaque on my wall. Uh-huh. Says that.
You know, speaking of variety, did you guys hear about the Smash tournament at Evo?
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
I mean, I don't really want to get into it because I do think it was a bit petty on both sides.
Yeah,
you know, true. I think that the four of those players all choosing the same character and then doing things like murder suiciding themselves to kind of keep the game going. Like, it was obviously four friends having fun.
Yeah.
But there's also like a spectacle and an amount of respect that's supposed to happen at those tournaments. And it was, you know, I know Japanese players were super pissed to watch that tournament,
There are also a bunch of teenagers.
That's true too.
Yeah.
Let's talk about New Smash.
Yeah. Back to what you said on the characters though. I do think that having that amount of people and having a character that you grew up playing and having them come back. So if someone who likes Snake, like, hey, Snake is back, I can still check out all these characters, but at least I have my favorite, the one that I know the best,
yeah,
or these new characters that I can try out too. And I think that like it also promotes longevity, because like if you're just doing whatever single player they have where they'll throw like all-star mode, there's so many different characters to fight against. Your battles will always be different. Like, oh, it's banned again. Have to watch out for that, you know, side dash move. Like, oh, this time it's King K. Rool and Bayonetta and Captain Falcon. Like, there's so much variety now.
Yeah. I've always thought about Smash Brothers as sort of like a menu, and it's got a lot of things on it, but there's also some people that are only want like chicken and white rice. And they're like, give me the beige food and that's it. Like, it's weird. This game will have like 100-something stages in it, and most pro players will just play on Final Destination. That said, I hope that the way the game unfolds, like when you buy it, you unwrap it and you put the cart in or however you're playing it, download it. It starts saying to you, like, play 10 matches as X character to unlock this, to unlock that. Like, it actually, if it starts funneling you through different scenarios to nudge you to play stuff outside of your comfort zone, I think that'll be really cool. Because, I mean, we've seen that it feels like the philosophy behind this game is to cater to pro players, but also to make something that's really fun for everybody. Mm-hmm. I personally love playing with items on. I love playing on every stage. I love playing everywhere.
My philosophy with Smash has always been the more chaotic it can be, the better.
Same. That's what I'm here for.
So I love that it's, you know, 8 players on every map. I love that there's all these outrageous, like, they really dug into the customization this time around. Mm-hmm. And so I tend to agree that I don't think that there are too many characters, but like, not unlike Brendan, I feel like I'm always going to play as Toon Link. I'm Toon Link till the day I die, so it doesn't matter to me.
When I am serious, I'm going to play as Pikachu every time.
Right.
And honestly, having this many characters is going to make the random select very intimidating for me. Because to get good at every character, I mean, that is just a huge undertaking.
It's also cool that some they introduced the new mode, that kind of iron, like, was it with Smashdown?
Brendan, don't jump ahead. Oh, we got to talk about stages first.
Yeah, speaking of stages, they said that all of the stages are automatically unlocked.
Yeah.
All unlockable guide.
How many stages
There's 103 stages, but there's so many different permutations to all of them. So yeah, let's talk a little bit about the stages that they showed off. So new stages include Dracula's Castle, Pokemon Stadium, Garden of Hope, Brinstar Depths, Summit, Unova Pokemon League, Magikant, Gamer, Final Destination, and New Donk City Hall, which, god damn it, they played that stupid song again, Jump Up Superstar. Just when I thought Jump Up Superstar was over, man,
the thing
about Jump Up Superstar is that E3 2017, our booth was across from Nintendo's, and they played Jump Up Superstar on loop all day for 4 days straight.
Right.
Regardless, that level looks very cool.
Yeah.
So they did make a point to say that all the stages, the older stages, were enhanced and rebalanced, which I think is really cool. Obviously, when you introduce all these new characters and new gameplay mechanics, like, you're going to have to change the way a level is spaced out and feels to adapt to those character changes.
But the 64 stages, they said they're going to try and keep as close to the original as possible to keep up that nostalgia factor.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. And there's also, I mean, like, there's so many things are there that it's almost worth talking about what's not there.
Poke floats.
The moving stages from Icicle Mountain and Donkey Kong had one that kind of moved up. And I can see why they didn't bring those back, because those were balanced for fast-moving characters that could constantly keep up. Well, you have, like, Little Mac.
Yeah.
He can't
jump that fast.
Yeah.
So like I can see why some of these movies they just didn't make the cut.
Sure.
And I'm kind of happy with that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I am too.
They were very unpopular.
Yeah.
I'm kind of torn on them all being unlocked from the start.
Yeah.
I am too.
The stages themselves?
Yeah.
Why?
I guess I love unlocking stuff in Smash Brothers. And more so than just trophies and more so than just sort of like, you know, different title screens and stuff like that. I want to be able to unlock characters, mm-hmm. stages, everything. I want that game to start slim and then unfold. And I know a lot of people are indifferent on that. Like personally, when Mario Kart 8 came to Switch and everything was just there to begin with, a lot of people were really happy about that because they're like, I already unlocked those on Wii U. But I was like, for people who buy this game for the first time now, there's really not a lot like to unlock.
Incentive, right?
Yeah. So I think that there need to be goals in a game. And
there must
goals,
be, though, right? Yeah. Like there must be that kind of stuff that
they might
coming.
Bring back like custom moves. Mm-hmm. That was unlockable. Yeah. Soundtracks. I don't know if all the levels will have all the soundtracks already, but that was a cool feeling to have. And like Brawl, like oh, cool. Here's a new song I unlocked and it sounds awesome. I want to play this immediately.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah. So I did want to talk about that as well. More than 900 tracks.
I know, that's crazy.
I put in my notes here in all caps, Jesus, because that's a lot of tracks.
28 hours
altogether. There's 34 tracks remixed just from Castlevania alone, which I think is so incredible.
I wonder what percentage of like the file size of the download is just music.
Tracks.
It feels
like
a lot.
We need to make a pie chart of the percentage of music tracks from each different franchise. Mm-hmm. Ooh.
There's a couple
we're
ones they've already.
That. Yeah. Don't take that.
There's a couple of tracks they've already put on the blog site that you can listen to now that we've been covering in our weekly Smash conversations, and they're really good.
Yeah.
And they have some like amazing guest composers.
Okay.
Like they bring back the one of the composers from Metal Gear Solid to do a redone version of Snake Eater, but it's like a really fast paced like electric guitar version, and it just sounds amazing. And like, if that's just a sample, I want to see everything. Mm-hmm. I'm so excited.
Yeah, I'm totally down.
I'm sure they're going to include classic versions and like new versions and metal versions, and I'm excited to hear.
Mm-hmm. Regardless of what they include, we'll be able to hear all of them in their entirety anytime we want, because one of the things that they introduced in this direct, which I thought was crazy, is the ability to listen to those hot jams any old time you want from your Switch as though it just turns your Switch into a giant iPod, basically.
Just grab your favorite pair of wired headphones, directly plug them into your Switch, and just hope that they add Bluetooth someday.
I can't think of a more convenient way to listen to your favorite video game music.
Here's what I'm going to do.
What?
I'm going to get my Switch, bring it to the car with me, plug in the audio cable to my car, and go on a road trip with 28 hours of Smash music. I would love to get in an Uber car and say, hey, I got 37 minutes of Castlevania for you.
Look, I think you're a nice dude, and I hate to feed the comment trolls here, but 28 hours of Smash music is the dumbest reason to go on a road trip.
Nintendo Voice Chat is sponsored by Gamefly, the best way to buy and rent your favorite games. Gamefly.com gives you access to 9,000 titles, which are mailed directly to your door. For one monthly fee, you can play the latest and greatest games for as long as you want with no late fees or due dates. Ever. When you get tired of a game, all you have to do is mail it back, and they'll send you the next title on your list. That means you can get Mario Odyssey, collect all 999 Power Moons, visit Peach in every kingdom, and place an impossible-to-find Luigi Balloon before swapping games. It is awesome. And now Gamefly is offering movie rentals as well. Today, every Nintendo Voice Chat listener gets access to a free premium 30-day trial by going to gamefly.com/voicechat. That premium trial lets you rent two titles at the same time, and you get it by going to gamefly.com/voicechat. Check it out.
Here we go.
So how long do you think the Switch will last in sleep mode while playing that music? We had a test.
Well, the fact that you're not burning the screen, I would assume that the screen just locks, right?
Mm-hmm.
I bet you could get a lot of hot jams out of the Switch before the battery dies. You could probably make it through half that library.
Yeah, that's true. we'll see. I don't know. I think like best test with gameplay is like 6 hours with. Not with Smash, of course. I think you're going to burn through that faster. But with like some kind of minimalist indie games, it's usually goes about 6 hours. But we'll see. This is all new.
Have you learned that by sitting on your couch playing the same game for six hours straight?
Absolutely. Yeah.
When you have a baby, you can do that kind of thing.
You can do that.
I have a quick question. Do you think other games should have this feature?
Yeah. I mean, I don't see why not.
I don't think most games need 28 hours of music.
No, well, yeah.
Not that much.
I think Smash is really special because it has some of the best, most iconic music that so many people know and love.
It's such an incredible collection of music across so many different games. Mm-hmm. Like, they showed that there's one screenshot in the Direct that shows all of the tracks from Zelda across all the different Zelda games rearranged specifically for Smash. Mm-hmm. And it's so cool to be able to mix and match that playlist and be like, okay, I want to hear this from Skyward Sword, and I want to hear this from Twilight Princess, and this from Minish Cap, and then but just put them all in one playlist for me. I think that's really cool.
I'm going to catch hell for this, but one of... I love...
Hey, it's okay. You're amongst friends.
Maybe you'll back me up on this. But I love every single thing about the way Smash Brothers comes together. I'm not crazy about actually sitting down and playing it. I think it's a fun party game, but playing it in single player at home is... It's enjoyable, but it's like... For all of these things to come together for this is like... It's not my favorite aspect of it, but I love the museum side of it. I love the trophies. I love the, like just the collecting, the unlocking, just the fanfare, like look, geeking out in the background. Like I actually love going through all the little trophies in the game and reading all about them.
If you,
you know, the only Smash I've actually kind of played through by myself the whole, most of the time was 64. Yeah. All of the games, I would have someone next to me and we'd hand off the controller and like, do everything.
Even oh, I played in a like, ton of Melee.
Yeah, I was going to say, even with like Subspace Emissary. Yeah.
So that's the thing. Cool. And I'm sure we'll get to it, but like that's, I really want a sort of like a single player thing here that funnels me into that situation.
Yeah.
Was it on the Wii version where you could unlock trophies just going through the single player campaign? Like you'd find them like, on the floor and pick them up?
Yeah.
Yeah.
They had like an all-star adventure mode for Melee.
Yep.
You'd find them on the ground too.
I love that. Yeah. And I like the capsule toy machine, all that stuff.
And then Brawl, they had CDs would fall out.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. In terms of like playing on a pro level and like, you know, like mastering the hitboxes on every character, like it's really, it ends up being just a very highly technical fighting game, even though it is a party game. So for me, that's actually like my least favorite part. Is playing Smash.
I think,
but I love everything else in it, so I buy it every time.
I think you and I have kind of gone on record on this show. You know, I said it earlier, but we're sort of fair weather Smash fans. I love playing Smash here in the office when we hook it up to the projector in the demo room, and like especially with 8-player Smash, like oh, it's so fun.
Yeah.
So that'll be really cool. But I can't really see myself like sinking a bunch of solo time into it. And that's fine. Mm-hmm. But before we get too deep into one thing, I did want to bring up one more thing about stages, and that's the ability that stages morph in this game, which I think is really, really cool. You can select two separate stages, and then throughout the course of the battle, those stages will shift in between each other. Like, we can see it right here as the stages shift if you're watching the video version. So, so cool. And it makes for so many more stage combinations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember, like, this is like way old school, but like I think it was Mortal Kombat 2 was one of the first fighting games I saw that did this, where you would uppercut somebody just hit them into the ground and you'd fall into a stage beneath the stage and there'd be spikes there.
Yeah.
Most recently, I talked about this last week with Overcooked 2. You're in a hot air balloon and it crashes and you land in a sushi restaurant. Like, I love stuff like that. Mm-hmm. This is an incredibly chaotic game, which I feel like they somehow keep figuring out ways to be getting more and more chaotic.
Oh, yeah.
Which is awesome.
Yeah. I think that the 8-player. The 8-player Smash combined with the visual fidelity, combined with all the items and all the assist trophies and everything, like it might blister your eyeballs.
Yeah.
Like it might be something that is really, really hard to track. I remember playing the Nintendo 64 version and feeling like I can't keep track of where my character is all the time. And that's something that concerns me, but also something that I really love about this version.
You gotta sit closer to the TV screen.
Yeah.
Oh, is that it? You just gotta be right up against it.
I mean, you have 8 players, you have morphing stages, you have these insane items that are coming in from everywhere, you have assist trophies, which effectively sometimes adds like 2 or 3 even more chaotic characters onto the screen.
I know for 3DS they had to have those outlines.
Yeah,
the characters.
Black outlines,
Yep.
So I wonder if that's for handheld? I don't know.
One more thing that I want to talk about with this direct was the blurred mode, the so-called blurred mode, right? Like, we saw a title screen, like a home screen, that has one mode that was totally blurred out, and there's a lot of speculation going on around like what that mode could be. Obviously, like my choice, my personal preference, I think it's probably a story mode to some extent, or like a boss rush mode, which I think could be really cool. What do you guys think about?
You go first, Brendan.
You want to go first?
Yeah. Okay.
Why don't you guys Rochambeau over? We got plenty of time. No, I'm kidding. Just talk.
Man,
she's Louise.
So Tom and I talked about this yesterday in a conversation where we looked at like the history of the Smash menus and noticed that.
history of the Smash menus.
I did the same thing. I went and looked up old Smash menus.
This is Brendan Graber from our Wikis team, obviously. Go ahead.
So what we noticed is that in
Ken
all,
Burns presents.
In the earlier ones, there was always that games and more section that went off to single player and multiplayer modes.
Yes.
And that's where Subspace Emissary was. It wasn't the single player modes, so that's probably not where we're going to see the adventure mode. Mm-hmm. The green icon in 3DS and Wii U was the Smash Run or the Smash Party mode.
Okay.
That was the green icon. So whatever it is, I think it's going to be that exclusive party-based mode that will be set aside from the regular smashing tactics. Whether that's kind of like an everyone does something crazy, whether it's how you unlock everybody. But whatever it is, it's not going to be single player.
Right. Hmm.
Casey, what do you think?
So someone, I can't recall who, but someone unblurred the block. I know.
Saboteur.
Scandalous. Mm-hmm. But they unblurred the block, and according to those people, they said that it says spirits.
Yes, I read that as well.
Whoa.
And I feel like it makes a lot of sense because so far we've seen Luigi die, quotes, Mario, Mega Man, King Dedede. They've all become spirits because that's what happens when you die, right? Yeah. Like according to Smash. but all of those cutscenes are these characters turning into spirits. So I'm wondering if that has some sort of connection.
Yeah. So what they did was I think they theorized that that's what it was. And they typed the word spirits and then blurred it again. But in the actual blurred image from the direct, this sounds like I'm talking about like the Bigfoot footage at this point. You actually see what looks like an S and then a lowercase p. So I'm with you on this theory. I totally agree. I think it would be awesome. I just want it to be single player. I don't care what you call it.
I want ghost boys or spirits.
Spirits starts with SP. Single player, also SP. Mm-hmm.
What if that mode was how you unlock all the characters by finding their spirits in this giant Castlevania labyrinth?
That'd be so cool.
Brennan's headcanon is just out of control today. I really like it a lot.
I love it.
Now, yes, Smash was the hottest topic for Nintendo this week, obviously from the Direct, but there was a lot of other Nintendo news.
We need to talk
about
the assist trophies.
We can come back to the assist trophies, or we can cover the assist
Rathalos
trophies.
Rathalos is an assist trophy. And he's also a boss.
And Shovel Knight.
I was very excited to see Shovel Knight and Gray Fox.
And his animation is really cool and super true to Monster Hunter. And they play his original theme song from Monster Hunter 1 when he comes in. Not the song that plays when you fight him in Monster Hunter World.
All right.
And the background that they introduce him in is from Monster Hunter 4U, the Ancient Step. I'm excited about Rathalos.
Are you a Monster Hunter fan? Mm-hmm.
No, I hate Monster Hunter. Also, Mimikyu does his Z move, which is Let's Snuggle Forever. And that's all I wanted. That's what I wanted to talk about.
Let's snuggle
it's
forever.
Adorable.
Yeah. Mimikyu's great.
We got a couple of quick stories we got to burn through here. So first of all, Casey, despite that monologue, thank you very much. I wanted to give you an opportunity for another one to tell us a little bit about the Pokemon Go Let's Go trailer that dropped.
Oh.
Specifically came out today. Mm-hmm. If you're watching on .com, it came out today. If you're watching on YouTube, it came out yesterday. Mm-hmm. Time travel. Casey, tell us about this trailer.
So oddly enough, so the English trailers that we get are usually kind of a little bit different from the Japanese trailers.
Mm-hmm.
So they show slightly different things. But the biggest news here is that Mega Evolution is returning to Let's Go Pikachu and Let's Go Eevee. I know they also showcased Team Rocket, but we already saw them last month.
Yeah.
So.
But I like seeing them again.
Yeah. I liked Team
Rocket. Like seeing James with the rose in his mouth when he throws a Pokeball.
Yeah. But it's their expressions are wonderful.
It's also an interesting twist, right? Because these are ostensibly remakes of Blue and Red, and there weren't Mega Evolutions back in those times. Mm-hmm. So I like that they're mixing. It's like a blend of the old and the new. And then they introduced 15 Kanto Pokemon re-trademarked in Japan.
Yeah.
You want to tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, so a few days ago, some people noticed that 15 Pokemon were trademarked again in Japan, as Zach just said. And the last time that the Pokemon company did that, those Pokemon ended up having Mega Evolutions. And that's really cool, and this makes a lot of sense, because included in that list is the Eevee Evolutions, Team Rocket's Pokemon, Weezing, Arbok, and Persian, and then also Raichu. So it makes a lot of sense for those Pokemon in particular to get Mega Evolutions because they're so important to Let's Go Pikachu and Let's Go Eevee. And they've also been showing a lot of animations of Pokemon walking behind their trainer.
Yeah.
And
yeah, I know. Put the internet in an uproar to see Venusaur walking behind your trainer because he has these little frog legs.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's really cute and kind of really ridiculous. Actually, I think the first thing I said when I saw it was, I hate this.
Oh, see, I liked it. I kind of always imagined him walking that way.
Have we never really seen his legs before?
I mean, no, we've seen those chunky boys, but yeah, look at him.
I love that. He's like a frog bear.
Yeah, he looks like a frog. It's fine. So I asked for questions for the show every week, and a lot of questions that we got this week, ironically, were about Ubisoft Steep. And it turns out we got a statement on Steep after a long silence that Steep has actually been canceled. Mm-hmm. So the official Steep account tweeted out, we are wholly dedicated to supporting the live game and made the decision to stop Steep development on the Nintendo Switch platform to focus on bringing new live content and challenges to Steep players instead. We'll have more exciting news to share soon.
Wow.
So for those of you that were looking to get so shreddy on your Nintendo Switch, it looks like that's probably not going to happen, at least not with Steep.
Right.
We're looking at probably the PlayStation 4 version here in an old trailer, but I did want to let people know Steep is no longer for the Nintendo Switch, but Ubisoft has a sort of make good coming for us in the form of Child of Light and Valiant Hearts coming to Switch on October 11th.
Right, the two November first 8th. UbiArt games.
That's right.
Really gorgeous. They're really fun. Steep's an interesting cancellation because this is the first game from that entire sort of original presentation of what the Nintendo Switch was,
mm-hmm.
Where they got everybody together, that has been straight up canceled.
I guess the cost of development was too high at an angle.
Don't do it. Don't say the word.
Don't you dare.
Yeah. But almost everything else in that has been released outside of stuff like Travis Strikes Again, mm-hmm. Maybe a couple other ones. But I mean, you think of that video where we saw like Karen bringing the Switch to the rooftop and everything, like NBA came out, Skyrim came out, Breath of the Wild came out. We actually ended up doing all the weird things in that commercial, even the Karen thing I've seen people do. So Steep is pour a little liquor out for Steep. Or buy it on the other consoles. They said they're committed to basically keeping that platform going elsewhere.
The story is that their development teams are focused on creating new content for the other console versions and not necessarily dedicating their time to Switch.
Because it would stagnate if they had to focus all their development resources on making a port of a game.
We may never know. Yeah.
So you know what needs to happen now? We need to fast track a port of Snowboard Kids.
Ooh.
Because there needs to be snowboarding on Switch.
I mean, you can just take your Switch snowboarding with you. Go on.
That's
a
incredibly
little
dangerous.
So dangerous, Casey. What a terrible idea. Don't do that at home.
I think I would break my legs doing that without the Switch, let alone with.
Check out this transition. So there's a lot of crossover happening in Super Smash Brothers.
That wasn't a transition at
but
all.
But what about the crossover what about the crossover of Metroid and Donkey Kong Tropical Freeze?
That's exactly like snowboarding.
So smooth.
Yeah.
So Shane Marchis has discovered that there are Metroid hidden in the background. It's kind of hard to see here, mm-hmm. but in Donkey Kong Tropical Freeze, in the a Miss Abyss level, you have to do all this like rigmarole, swim backwards and get injured at a certain point and blah, mm-hmm. blah, blah. And then lo and behold, you can see a Metroid hanging out in the background. I thought this was a nice little Easter egg.
I can see why it was so hard to find. Like, you had to like go back through a barrier that hurt you. So why would you ever want to go back in a level and wait in front of an area?
So did someone organically figure this out? Or
I believe
someone
so, yeah.
So, so it's been rumored that there was multiple Metroid Easter eggs, and people have been looking because this is on the Switch version and the Wii U version, and nobody had found it until our friend Shane. And it just turns out that our buds over at Retro are still thinking about Metroid, mm-hmm. still hiding it in the background.
It makes sense. And the original Donkey Kong Returns for the Wii, there was Samus's gunship was in the back of a level.
Right.
Yeah,
that was
the first
Easter egg. So it made sense that there was one hiding somewhere in this game.
Yep. And in general, it was easier to keep a secret on the Wii U. Put it on Switch, a lot more people will find it.
Sure.
But this is really interesting because it's like it's such a highly specific set of criteria to like find this organically, like you said. I mean, you have to swim through this electric barrier and get hurt and then kind of chill out for a second. And a lone Metroid floats up and disappears. And I saw that the person who put it there was kind of like, you found it. I didn't think you ever would or anyone ever would, but there it is. It's out there
but
now.
But your prize for all these hours of trial and error, one tiny Metroid.
One tiny Metroid.
Another bit of news here that I want to talk about. Persona Q2 announced for the 3DS. That's Persona Q2 New Cinema Labyrinth, an Etrian Odyssey-like dungeon crawler that consists of the cast of Persona 3, 4, and 5. November 29th, 2018 in Japan, although a Western release has not been announced. Did you guys play Persona Q?
I have not. Andrew just told me about it, though, and it sounds really cool.
It's a really fun dungeon crawler. Yeah.
I can almost hear Andrew squealing right now.
I mean, yeah. You'll notice that I said Andrew Goldfarb made us include this news. So, I liked the original Persona Q. I'm excited that it's getting a sequel and it has the cast from 5 in there. It should be a lot of fun.
The thing that made me interested the most is that as you're going through the dungeon, you actually have to take notes on the DS's touchscreen on your physical map.
That's right.
Which is really cool. That's really neat.
That is nice. I like that.
One last news story here, and this is sort of news of the weird that I wanted to cover off, but some kids shot a copy of Earthbound into space. Did you know that?
Yep.
You hear about this?
Good.
What?
Yeah, so our friends over at Nintendo Life are reporting about this, and basically what the deal is Ronnie Doyle, a member of Earth to Sky Calculus, which is a group of kid scientists studying the stratosphere, got to shoot an item of his choosing into space. He chose his prized possession, a copy of Earthbound on the SNES. You can see it here. They're basically just launching this old cartridge right up into the stratosphere, and it went up 100,000 feet, Brian. Can you imagine that high?
Is that space?
Yeah.
One day it's going to come back down close and enough. Hit someone in the head.
No, it landed gently, and now people are bidding on it because it's such a limited edition cartridge.
Did they hope that like an alien would find it and be like, I'll remake this game if Nintendo won't put it on the Switch?
Yes,
we'll
alien.
Do it.
Yes, Brandon, they hoped an alien would find it.
That's what I would do.
Make all of our dreams come true.
I thought space was like more feet away.
More feet away than 100,000?
100,000 doesn't feel
it's
like a
100,001 feet.
Okay, there we go.
We're talking about a lot of releases, a lot of new games. Our friend Mike Smurda over on the Facebook group asks, talk about Flipping Death. I am debating buying it. Well, lucky for Mike, we have a review from Cam Shea over in our Australian office that we're going to toss to now. We're going to excuse Brendan, and when he comes back, we're bringing on Brandon Tyrell to talk about Dead Cells. So stick around.
Holy crap, a ghost!
Welcome to the land of the dead.
Cute.
What happens when Death goes on vacation? Well, in Flipping Death, he mistakenly leaves the job to the recently deceased Penny, who learns she can help restless spirits by jumping between the lands of the dead and the living. It's a cool premise, and executed very much like a spiritual successor to classic LucasArts point-and-click adventure games. Flipping Death's vibrant presentation, quirky characters, and fun plot ensured I was in for the whole ride.
This is actually really dangerous! Apparently over here is the best place to be!
Like Zoink Games' previous work, Stick It to the Man, Flipping Death has a similar emphasis on getting inside characters' heads and solving scenarios using suitably bizarre lines of logic, but this time around you're physically possessing them to do it. Need something poked? There's a guy for that.
There's nothing more evil than poking things.
Need to open a can of paint? Maybe that drill-wielding dentist can help. Want to crap on the heads of every character just for the fun of it? Take over the seagull. It's a fun take on the traditional inventory and interaction systems. Characters who can be possessed, be they human, mermaid, or cat, appear as highlighted silhouettes in the murky, mysterious world of the dead. But once you take control of them, the entire map flips to a mirror version of itself, revealing quaint streets, ramshackle buildings, and colourful characters. It's a cool transition, and there are some big differences between the two sides. Houses and cars come to hideous life when you enter the death world, and new platforms and paths become available. Penny, meanwhile, can use her Reaper's Scythe like a grappling hook to leap around in Deathworld, but is bound to the movement abilities of her hosts in life. It's interesting to use these two modes of movement together to solve puzzles. Flipping Death is built around solving the zany problems its characters throw at you.
Oh, blimey, there's the dead body I keep in my freezer. God, I should really find a better place for him.
These are generally quite surreal, but I was never really frustrated because a small amount of trial and error always got me to the correct solution. I actually found the main obstacles to completing puzzles were mechanical in nature. The platforming feels a little sluggish, while finicky positioning occasionally left me wondering whether I was doing the right thing or not. Thankfully, there's an image-based hint system if you want to nudge in the right direction. The puzzles are creative and fun, but they're largely an excuse for Flipping Death's comedic sensibility. One highlight is the hilarious interactive flashback to history times, which serves to provide backstory and introduce ye olde versions of many of the characters.
Burn. Hey, officer.
Forsooth, you shy. I am from olden times. Your strange accent hath confused me.
I also loved hearing Penny strike up a conversation with each character she spirit jumps into. Some think she's their conscience, another, God, an old woman creeping dementia.
Oh, gracious, now I'm hearing voices.
One particularly lonely crab was simply stoked to have some company. Penny herself is a likable lead who has a lot of fun with the bizarre predicament she finds herself in.
I'm just dressed up as Death, which is absolutely the most goth thing ever.
And her broader story anchors Flipping Death. It's pure absurdity, but nonetheless has some heart. It also helps to have a relatable character in amongst the chainsaw-obsessed mermaids, British serial killers, and, my personal favourite, police officers who become elite hackers in their sleep. A little more variety wouldn't have gone astray. Most of the chapters in Flipping Death are set across the same basic map with a handful of changes to keep things interesting. But ultimately, it's the characters who drive the experience, and the overall visual design is great. This pop-up picture book fever dream world really is gorgeous. If you like your games with an offbeat sense of humour and plenty of personality, Flipping Death comes recommended. Its central hook of flipping between life and death makes for an interesting world to navigate and puzzles to solve, and its characters are so oddball and endearing, you'll want to hear every conversation in full, not to mention find out how it all ends.
This ends now, Dr. Laser.
Curses!
For more from Zoink Games, check out the first 10 minutes of Flipping Death and the announcement trailer for Ghost Giant.
One thing I didn't account for was an afterlife full of ghosts who could possess the living and use their bodies to solve problems.
To be fair, people do rarely.
Of the Altana take.
We're back! And look who's with us.
Hi.
It's Brandon.
Hello.
It's Brandon Tyrell, our friend and yours. Now, Brandon, you've taken over the review of a little game that, not a lot of people have discussed lately. It's Dead Cells.
Dead Cells. Have you heard of it?
Yeah, I've heard of it. All right. Hey, Brandon, you've been playing this game like crazy. I know that you've been playing this game like crazy. I've been playing this game like crazy.
Yep.
Casey played this game like crazy for about 20 minutes before we came in here.
I actually played for a whole hour and 15 minutes because I didn't want to do anything else.
I'm so proud of you.
It is like mild crazy.
It's crazy. I'll tell you what. Hey. This game is outstanding.
So good.
Yeah. Right? Just to get right into it.
Yeah, let's do it.
As a 2D Metroidvania, which I say in air quotes because it's not quite a Metroidvania, but it's obviously borrowing a lot of ideas from that sort of genre.
Yeah.
It is probably the most fun, fast, fluid.
Frenetic. Frenzied.
How many more can we do? Let's keep this alliteration
run up. Funky.
I mean, my first F word was, I shouldn't say. So.
Yeah.
Friendship.
I was warned about F-bombs coming out here, and we just got them all out of the way.
Yeah, we did it. No, this game rules, and I want you to talk to me a little bit about your experience playing through this game, because you just beat it today.
I did, yeah. I got a standing ovation from the office, so thank you guys.
So bummed. We're always throwing these like super brutal games at you. Yeah. Your first review was Bloodborne.
My first review here. Well, it was my second one, but the first one was actually like...
Hey, don't ruin the story. Okay.
Anyway. One of my earliest reviews here was Bloodborne, yeah. And it was a very similar thing. It's just 80 hours
brutal,
straight.
Brutal, beautiful.
Yeah. Bodacious.
Bodega.
I heard you looked like Death after that.
Yeah.
Well, you look better after playing Dead Cells.
Thanks,
so,
man,
what is it about Dead Cells that has kept your look up, but has it also proven a challenge for you?
Fortunately, I played like 40 hours before I was assigned the re-review. So I had a lot of that already under the hood done.
Mm-hmm.
This time around, it's less sort of punishing. What Dead Cells excels at and why it's so good is that it is bite-sized chunks.
Mm-hmm.
And that last boss is so brutal. Not going to spoil anything for you, but you can opt to totally like there. We were talking about this earlier. There were runs where I'm like, okay, I'm going to go for the final boss this time. And an hour and a half later, he just pulps me into the ground and with like unceremoniously murdered. And then I'm like, you know what? I don't think I want to do that again. I would rather just maybe go farm some cells or maybe go find some blueprints, or there's a lot of smaller activities you can do rather than just like throw yourself at a brick wall over and over. You know?
The game, the mechanics of it itself, like they feel so fluid and so fast that it really encourages two different styles of gameplay, which I think is really, really what makes this game interesting. Mm. And that's the idea that every run that you do, you can do an exploration-based run where you're running around finding upgrades, killing more enemies to gain more cells to upgrade your long-term abilities. You can find better weapons. You can do Brandon, you got to raise your seat. These guys are telling me. You can find these things that are upgrading you as you move through the game. Or if you opt, the other option is to just speed run and get to where you last left off, right? So in the same way that in a Dark Souls game, you might get killed somewhere and drop all your items and you want to get back there to get your items. Like here, you're speed running to get, there's a couple of reasons, but one is just to get back to where you left off.
Right.
And both of them have their pros and cons, both styles of play. And I think that the speedrun version is amazing because you can run through the game and find doors that open based on speed.
Sure, they're time gates, yeah.
But the exploration-based one is interesting because the more you build up the character, the stronger you get. You'll fare better in battles, obviously, mm-hmm. but there's this sense of – this overlaying sense of dread because the further you get into it, you're like, man,
the more
if I blow
you're
this,
investing, yeah.
if I blow this and this character dies, you start from zero, basically.
Yeah, to be clear, this is a procedurally generated game, and so every time you play it, the level layout will be different. But right. I know I've gone on record on the show before in saying I hate that in Metroidvania games.
Yeah.
But somehow it really works here because I think whatever systems are at play creating these levels dynamically on the fly are really smart and really fun, and also the character movement in this game is so blazing fast and moving around is so fun and fluid and quick that it's nice to jump in and get thrown these new levels and dig around them. You also can go through this game in different paths, mm-hmm. so you don't have to go through the exact same levels every single time. It branches off. You might get to the last boss in the game differently than I do,
sure.
But to be clear, when you die, you effectively lose everything.
Well,
asterisk.
Yeah,
you know. So what you do lose, you lose the cells,
weapons,
that you gained,
your items.
Yeah, your items. But you get starting weapons every time you start a new run, and by finding blueprints in the game that are dropped by different enemies or just found in the wild, you can basically add to the kind of Russian roulette of which items you'll start with. Mm-hmm. So eventually you'll have this massive army of items that you could start with. Some of them are amazing, some of them are bad, and if you jump in, you get some bad ones. It's two button presses to basically
restart.
Jump in and start all over again. Yeah. Or it'll get you sort of out of your comfort zone and go, okay, you know, I'm playing with a whip this time. That's different than I usually play. So it's going to be a little more slow.
It encourages different play styles for sure.
Yeah.
Casey, you just started kind of getting your feet wet with this mm-hmm. game. Like, give us your initial impressions in the hour and 10 minutes that you spent with it.
Man, so one of the things that really drew me were the different loadouts that you could come up with or
mm-hmm.
just
Bingo,
like
yeah.
randomly have.
Yeah.
They were so
assigned at some point.
Yeah, they made my run through so different and made my strategy so different. At one point I was running around with dual swords and a fleet freeze blast, and the dual swords did more damage when enemies were frozen.
Mm-hmm.
So it was great because I could jump down, freeze, and then kill them in one shot.
Right.
And in another run, I had the freeze blast, but then I had two different traps. So I could lay down my traps and freeze people, and it would just completely destroy everyone.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah.
I think the combination of sub-weapons and the sort of mm-hmm. more offensive stuff that you have in your hand, or offensive, not offensive.
It's disgusting.
And
the sword that curses at you.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a combination of those.
And when I first went in, I immediately was like, oh, like bow and arrow is way better than a shield. Like, I want to be offensive. But you can actually parry with the shield, mm-hmm. which mm-hmm. I didn't know at first.
I find you mostly offensive. So
yeah, that's fine. I'm offensive to a lot of people.
No, I was watching Brandon play the other day, and like he ends up using shields a lot more than I do. So you have people that can be sitting right next to you who play this game completely differently mm-hmm. than you. And you have those options on the fly. You are not married to the weapons you start with. You can find more in each run. You can upgrade them sort of individually. The amount of stat boosting stuff mm-hmm. that you can put into it is crazy.
So there's a whole sub layer to actually which weapons you have. Like, you know, everyone was saying you can get a shield or a sword, but you can also get a sword that, you know, covers enemies in oil, and then you can get a bow that when it hits an enemy it bursts into flames mm-hmm. and put one and two together, an oil covered enemy burns, you know, hotter and more, so it does more damage.
Yeah,
there are all these small little sort of, I guess you'd call them like Diablo-esque modifiers yep. on weapons yep. and so you can build an actual build. It's not just like I'm going with a sword and a bow. It is I have a build. This complements this. This complements this, and it all synergizes together.
Yeah.
To the point where you can actually create a tremendously powerful build just based on modifiers.
Well, and what's nice is like if you find a build that you love, you can find a collector mm-hmm. in the course of the levels that you can purchase those items again should he have that loadout with him
right.
mm-hmm. on those runs and get back to that build relatively quickly. Mm-hmm. Or, like Brian was saying earlier, you know, based on the RNG, essentially, of what drops at the beginning of the game, you can challenge yourself to play in a totally different style.
Yeah.
And I think that's what makes this game so replayable. And, like, Brian and I have talked about it on the show. Like, I'm not a procedurally generated dude. Like, I've been excited for this game, but then when I heard that...
you're pretty bespoke.
Kind of. But when I heard that this game was, you know, sort of randomly generated, it turned me off at first.
So I think that scares a lot of people. Yeah. And to go back to what Brian was saying, where he was saying you lose everything, asterisk, I think this is a tale of... Dead Cells is a tale of two games. You have the metagame, which is...
Dickens.
My favorite. The tale of two games. You have the overarching metagame, which is you are unlocking blueprints. You are getting cells to unlock more blueprints. You're purchasing more items. You're upgrading your stuff so that when you die, you have more gold you can carry over. You have more, you know, slugs off that health potion. And the micro game, which is what happens from the moment you stand up to the moment you die. All of that stuff is erased, right? But you still maintain all of your progress that you put into this game.
Right. So I want to talk real quick about one of my favorite things about this game, which is something I didn't even know was part of it, is the sort of metagame of a specific item called the Hunter's Grenade. So you find... you find this item very early on, if you're lucky, and it effectively turns this game into what some of my favorite kind of 2D GBA and DS Castlevania games did, which is that every enemy in this game has a blueprint set that unlocks an item. And to get that, you have to get this grenade, which you find in the first area eventually you unlock, and you can knock down an enemy to a certain amount of health, hit them with this grenade. It'll turn the grenade into sort of like a
extractor,
vacuum. Yeah, an extractor, like a Ghostbuster, you
like
know,
Luigi's Mansion. Let's just keep it Nintendo themed.
Exactly. And then it'll turn that enemy into an elite version of that enemy, which effectively creates like a micro boss fight right in front of you. And then you have to extract that blueprint from them, and then you take it to the end of the level where you can, you know, get to your safe space and heal and level up. And then that item is, that item is stored forever. So that's how you start getting blueprints in this game. And so every enemy in this game has one. Mm-hmm. So you can just run through, beat the bosses, try to beat the game, stuff like that. Or you can go hunting, which is super cool. And it just makes it so, like, I'm at a point now where I've cleared out every enemy in the first three areas in terms of blueprints. Mm-hmm. And I'm on, like, the fourth area. So I have to carry this blueprint.
This is what we were talking about.
It's one of my sub items all the way through this
game.
You're
basically handicapped.
You find yourself, and then you find yourself speed running to get to the end of that level because you're like, I have to get back to this gentleman who we're seeing here in order to store that blueprint or else it'll be gone forever.
And on top of that, to add one more layer, to get this Hunter's Grenade, there's a door that you have to buy your way into. Or you can beat down the door, and if you do, you become cursed, and you have to kill 30 enemies without getting hit.
That happened to me like my first playthrough, and I was like, "Why am I cursed? What did I do? I don't understand."
You angered the gods.
Yeah, it's really, really awesome.
I love this game. I plan on spending a lot of time with it. It's one of my favorite games that's come out so far this year.
I agree.
So far, it's friggin' August. Casey, you've played an hour and a half. Yeah. Are you
going
to stick with it?
Yes, I'm going to get it. I was kind of iffy about it because I'm usually not that into 2D side-scrolling games, to be honest. Yeah. But this really hooked me. I really like it a lot.
That's awesome. You've sunk a ton of hours into it.
I think I'll keep playing.
You're going to see through to the end. Brandon, you just beat the game today. Yeah. We can look for your review tomorrow.
It'll be up tomorrow, end of day.
Okay.
Oh, last question. What loadout did you beat the game with?
Ooh, good question.
I can't give away my secret.
What? Come on.
The loadout I killed the final boss with, I was running a... No one's going to understand this, but I was running a tactics build 622-6. With two turrets and a frost.
I heard everyone in the control room.
I know,
laugh.
I heard it too. With
dork.
With two turrets.
No, I love it. Please.
Two turrets, a bleeding knife, and I forget what it's called, but an ice crystal.
Well, strictly thing. Tactics build 622-6.
And actually, everything synergized together with fire.
Now that's Dead Cells. If for some weird reason you haven't heard of that game this week.
No comment. We like to play a little game here on NVC called Question Block. That's not so much a game as it is answering people's questions. So
that can be a game.
Yeah. I figured we'd kick this off topically this week. And our friend Luke Baker from the Facebook group asks, is the D-pad a problem for Dead Cells on the Pro Controller? Are the frame rates on Switch bothersome enough to buy it elsewhere?
Ooh.
I will say, short answer, yes and no. Yes, the D-pad is an issue. Playing on the Pro Controller makes it much easier, but the D-pad on the Switch itself is not very comfortable.
It is so bad. I played it for the first time today.
Yeah, especially for high-level gameplay here, when you need to be really nuanced and fast, not great. I haven't had too many frame rate issues. I've seen some slowdown, but it hasn't really bothered me in terms of like the game itself.
I had a few weird camera jumps.
That's exactly
That's a weird one.
It almost feels like somebody was trying to film you, and then you move too quickly, and they kind of like snapped over to the right.
A quick pan, if you will.
Quick pan. Yeah. I did a D-pad Joy-Con mod to my Nintendo Switch.
Oh, that's cool.
Serendipitously, like 2 days before this game came out. You can buy these shells on Amazon. If you've ever built like a model kit or done any sort of like little amounts of tinkering with electronics like that, it is dangerous. And if you fry your thing, it's dead. And sorry, but
Brian, you little tinkerer.
High stakes.
Just you get a little tri-wing screwdriver. The kit's like $20 or something like that. And I have a D-pad for my Switch in portable mode. In the meantime,
you don't have to like solder or anything.
No soldering. It's just sort of taking apart tiny little screws. Put them in a shot glass or something. Don't drink the whole time because you're going to screw your thing up.
I forgot.
An empty shot glass that you didn't.
I won't be able to put this back together for at least a day.
But yeah, look into that. On top of that, there's the Hori D-pad, which we talked about recently, but all that eats at your battery, and we've been reading some weird issues about that in general. Yeah, right. So.
Next question. According to Jamie Hill, this is the best question. He says I completely dropped off the gaming scene throughout high school and college, the 360 PS3 gen, and only played a few games during my childhood. I'm now a retro collector and consumed with the nostalgia for the 90s. I have this wish that I could exist for 5 to 7 years with no new games, and I could just focus on my enormous backlog of retro games from every console. Have you, or have any of you ever felt this way, and what's the top of your shame list? Mine is every Metroid game. First of all, Jamie, play a Metroid game. Secondly, what are your games of shame? What's a game that people bring up to you that you've never played and you have to cop to it?
I mean, my list keeps growing, but the ones that stand out right now are like the most recent ones. Mm. So never played Shadow of the Colossus, and when that remake came out, people were just giving me all kinds of mess about that.
Mm-hmm.
Still haven't played it. There's a lot more, but let's cycle through.
Okay. I never
get the heat off me.
I never really got into the Halo games, and I love shooters and I love sci-fi stuff.
That's crazy. That's what I was going to say. I've kind of infamously been... I've never played a Halo game. And I started playing the Master Chief Collection. I got an Xbox a couple of weeks ago. And I started... Pear actually told me to start with 4.
Yep.
And
it's very Metroid-y.
Well, and I didn't listen to him, and I started with 1. And it's that game has... like, I'm sure that Halo is great.
Yeah.
The game is very old. It feels very
archaic, played 1 when it came out with friends.
It was very slow.
Yeah.
Best way to play it.
Yeah, exactly. And I play the single-player stuff, too. It's just, for some odd reason, that's a blind spot. And I also... I have this problem with things, and I'm sure people do with the same way with movies and books and TV shows. Mm. Once something has gone on too far, I feel like an idiot, or I'm sort of like scared to come in too late.
Yeah.
So like Halo's lore is so deep now that when I jump into the newest one, I'm like scared off, and so I just pretend it doesn't exist and hide. You know?
I get that. Casey, what about you?
Probably Demon's Souls and Dark Souls.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah.
I feel like you'd be really into those games.
Yeah, me too. That's funny.
That's why it's so weird. I feel like I would be too, and I just never got around to
it. A lot of people
it.
Recommend those games to you. Yeah.
Did you play Bloodborne?
I played Bloodborne.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. But, actually, it took me a long time to get into the Souls games. My first real one was Bloodborne,
mm-hmm.
and then I kind of retroactively went back.
I think that as a studio has designed their games more and more accessible, mm-hmm. With each iteration. Sekiro looks to be like the most accessible of any of these games, but it also took Bloodborne for me to get into that mm-hmm. series.
Do you play Switch a lot?
Yeah.
Okay, so you should, eventually one day put that game out.
Someday Dark Souls Remastered.
I know.
One of these days.
This summer this year. Wait. Mm-hmm.
Next question. Devin Vias asks, do you all agree that Toad should be in Smash?
100%.
Yes.
Yeah, why isn't he? He's been in Mario Kart.
No.
Ryan disagrees.
He's a playable character in Mario Party.
No, I don't think he...
Wait, he is in Smash. Peach uses him.
Yeah, she beats people up with
him.
Yeah.
She uses him as a weapon?
Yeah.
But as a real, selectable character. Nah, if Captain Toad was in Smash, I'd be different. Down with that.
I don't think either of them should be exposed to all that mess.
Yeah. All that nonsense.
They're just so pure and innocent. Just stay away.
Just hold on to it.
I don't want to see you get killed by Ridley. Just stay away.
Oh, yeah.
Just stay here. Fight the bird. Get the stars. Find the hearts. Fall in love. Just stay away from Smash and be safe.
You've painted such a beautiful picture for Toad's life.
I really, really love him and his girlfriend.
I'm really glad that you set that up.
As we watch basically kidnapping right now.
Well, there's that sadness.
Toad's girlfriend just got kidnapped.
I know.
I've been reading a lot of questions from the Facebook group, but you can also get at us on Twitter. That's at NVC Podcast, just like Nick Hickman did when he asked, with Castlevania and Metal Gear Solid being so prominently featured in Smash Brothers Ultimate, do you guys and gals think Konami could put a few of those series titles on the Switch in coming months?
Ooh.
Seems like an easy way to make money for Konami. I would love for the Metal Gear collection to come out on Switch. I'm a huge Metal Gear fan. I think it's beautiful on the Vita. I would love for that collection to come to Switch.
Play
through all those again.
When the Switch launched and Bomberman sold 500,000 units, I said...
It's Bomberman.
Bomberman. Yeah. I could have sworn that Konami and every other company would take note, look at the stuff they have that's easy to sort of port over and make it work. I imagine that the Mega Man games are doing well for Capcom, those collections. I mean,
Mega Man.
Mega Man?
Yeah. Yeah.
Do we just have funny names for everything
on
NBC?
That's right, yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay.
So, yeah, I feel like that those are easy wins. More so, I was really hoping that this news with Simon Belmont would lead us to getting a brand new dedicated
Castlevania 64 finally comes to Switch.
It's pronounced Catsylvania.
Catsylvania. Yeah.
Sounds delightful.
Even if you're hard up for a Castlevania game on the Switch, you've got
Dead Cells.
Dead Cells, first and foremost, which feels like the most perfect evolution of the Castlevania formula.
Hollow Knight.
Hollow Knight. And there's also, oh my God, Bloodstained, Curse of the Moon.
Yeah.
And the full-blown version of Bloodstained coming out, sometime soon.
Yes. Yeah.
They keep saying 2018, but we don't know for certain.
That said, I mean, I shouted them out before, but I would love a collection of the three Game Boy Advance Castlevania games on the Switch. That pixel art scales beautifully.
It would work so well, mm-hmm. given the resolution of it.
Yeah.
That's
Circle of the Moon, Harmony of Dissonance, and Aria of Sorrow, it might be the best Castlevania.
Yeah, I love that.
Never played
better than
before.
Symphony.
Yeah,
Symphony's really good.
But Aria of Sorrow, like the way that you mix and match the spirits in that game to create new powers and stuff, really super cool. Mm-hmm. I believe that was Aria of Sorrow.
Yeah,
don't get at me in the comments if that was the wrong Castlevania game.
Obviously, there's still that. I mean, people see the Konami logo and they're still pretty irked for good measure for a lot of reasons over the last.
You know, it's a funny word, irked.
Irked.
Yeah,
it's pronounced irked. So I think that would be good faith. That would be good guy Konami to sort of take a bunch of those great games and just put them on Switch. So
Derek Grant over on Twitter asks, Casey specifically, what advice do you have for us newbies to Magoo, which I assume is Monster Hunter Generations Ultimate.
I thought you were talking about the blind cartoon.
Ultimate.
Yeah.
Magoo.
Good job.
It was before your time.
Well,
I'm
trying
just to close your eyes and walk on a construction site.
Yeah. I'm trying to set a precedent of every game that's called Ultimate, just naming it Ultra.
There's way too many anyway. There's too many Ultimates. Anyway, my advice to you is to go to our Monster Hunter Generations wiki.
Oh boy. What's up with you wikis folks always plugging?
Well, all of the advice that we have to give is already written down on wikis. So.
Well, Zach, let me tell you right now.
You know, there's not a way that I can counter argue that. Yeah. So.
But anyway, really there is things to do first, and there's a basic tips and tricks page. Uh-huh. There are little tutorials for all of the different styles, and if you don't know what that means, the wiki will explain it to you.
Yes, Monster Hunter is as much about fashion as it is about
that's why I put on
you
this
be
hat.
That fashion hunter.
Yeah,
it's perfect. I'm sure it gives you like, I don't know, plus one evasion or something.
Definitely not that.
No,
it gives me
not.
Plus six cool though. Okay, so over on Facebook, Sean McGee asks, best bar arcades when visiting San Francisco. Brian, this one I want to give to you because you just did a whole show about.
I did an entire show about
traveling
this.
To barcades.
Yeah, I did just Google IGN Fast Travel. I did a 4-part. Basically TV show style travel show about barcades and cool nerd culture here in San Francisco, Seattle, Portland, Oregon, and Los Angeles. So go check that out.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Oh,
but specifically here in San Francisco, what barcades do you recommend?
Arcade is good.
Arcade's good.
Yeah, there's Brewcade. That's on Market. There's a lot of good craft beer at Brewcade, which I think is really cool.
There's the Foundry.
If you're looking for more of like heavier on the arcade side than the bar side, Coin Op.
Yep.
It's really good on
it. It's really cool.
Coin Op is a chain, I believe.
Yeah.
But they opened up. It's actually pretty close to our office. We've been there a couple times.
Is it 3rd or 4th Street?
I think it's 3rd.
And so the one we didn't get to include was, there's a weird one in Fisherman's Wharf called the Museum of something.
Oh, yeah, it's like Musée Mécanique, right? Like they're not even games, they're just attractions basically.
Oh, yeah. Like, so it's some cool of like though. The original coin operated machinery game.
It's like you put your hands on the brass pillars and it's like test your love connection.
Yeah, like stuff those, like that. So if you're in the Wharf, which if you're traveling from out of town, your parents are probably booking a hotel there because a lot of people do that.
Hey, Conrad 69 actually just pipes in over here on the old chat and says that this hat actually gives me +6 millennial points.
So, oh, okay.
I'll take that.
That sounds great.
Brian, I got one last question, and I hate to double up, but this one is also for you. Now that you've acquired one, have you figured out where babies come from? Asking for a friend.
Have acquired one?
Yeah, didn't you just...
Did you buy your baby, right?
No, I've been weird...
Didn't you pre-order that baby?
Yeah. I did, yeah. I didn't know how to... I still don't know how to...
Like, whole months.
I don't know how to talk about that because I've been like, when we got our baby, you know, and it's kind of like, well, we didn't get...
When we went down to the baby store.
Did we earn it? Did we make it?
You had it?
We didn't, I mean...
Is it an event?
Because people were like, when I bought my dog and other people were like, you didn't buy your dog, you adopted your dog. And so we didn't... We just had it. We had our baby, but I didn't have it.
You crafted it.
Yeah.
What was the question?
I mean, I'm gonna be honest, this is a pretty R-rated question and you went in a very different direction. So
do I know where they come from?
Have you figured out where babies come from?
They come from the question block.
That's right. Nicely done.
And you hit it and the coin comes out.
I feel like that is borderline euphemism, but
Oh yeah.
Thanks a lot.
From the baby store.
Guys, we gotta wrap it up. I wanna thank you guys so much for being on the show. Yeah, Brandon, thanks for coming to talk about Dead Cells. Casey, Brian, thank you for always sticking around. And thank you guys for watching. Remember, IGN has only one Nintendo show, and it's this one, NVC, 3 p.m. Thursdays. And you can catch us on YouTube the following day, Fridays at 3 p.m. But we're not the only show on IGN. There's also Beyond, which Brian is a part of. Mm-hmm. There's also Game Scoop, which Casey is often a part of. And then you can see my friend Brandon over here on Unlocked just about every old week. Is that right?
Every week.
Thank you guys so much for watching. We'll be back next week at 3 p.m. on Thursday. And until then... Get the thing.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Buntwine, erstwhile monk turned traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Buntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.